Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. No mai, haere mai. My name is Victoria. I'm an alcoholic and chairperson for today's meeting. We open AA meetings with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So, welcome again, and thank you for joining us today on this beautiful day in Wellington on the Wellington AA On Air podcast. We are broadcasting on 106.1 FM, Wellington Access Radio. So, we have a little bit of an interesting meeting on air today. As they say, it only takes two alcoholics to make a meeting. But in this case, the alcoholics in the meeting are myself and you, the listener, as we don't have anyone else in the studio today. So what I've done today is I've organized for a few call-ins from alcoholics, sober alcoholics in AA across the world to phone in and share their experience, strength, and hope with us. So this meeting also opens with the Alcoholics Anonymous preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women. Let me find the preamble. There may be a bit of dead air today, and I do apologize for that in advance, as I am in the studio alone at the moment. Let me just track it down. Okay, I might share the preamble a little bit later on in the meeting, but I will also open with the reading How It Works from the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, pages 58 to 60. Right. Chapter 5, How It Works. We have rarely seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They're not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They're naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We could not find an easier, softer way. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapters to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God would and could if He was sought. Fantastic. And I've managed to track down the Alcoholics Anonymous preamble as well. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Great, so now we will go into the sharing portion of the show. So as a chairperson, I will share first, and then I'm going to take a few phone calls from people. So hopefully we'll just be able to broadcast them over the mic through the phone, and that way we can have a few different sober alcoholics sharing their experience, strength, and hope today. So my name is Victoria, and I'm an alcoholic. I always love reading parts of the Big Book because I find that every time I do, I get something completely different out of it. And I remember when I first came in, after I got over the initial denial and anger, that one of the few things that I felt brought me comfort or made me feel better in my life. I felt like it had been ripped away from me prematurely. I stopped drinking and came into the program at quite a young age. I was in my, I did my drinking in my late teens and got sober at the age of 20. And I knew a lot of the people around me drank well into their 40s. And I didn't at the time see that as a blessing as I do today. I saw it as that I missed out on, you know, 2 decades of fun. if anything, I was quite jealous of these people that, you know, got to go on and have the party for much longer than I did. But really, for me, the party was over. You know, the party had ended. There was no more wild nights or fantastic stories of, you know, meeting exciting people or going to exciting venues and wild parties with, you know, great stories afterwards, or, you know, waking up on the beach and watching the sunrise and you know, times with good friends. There was none of that. there were none of those moments that came with the really, really early drinking and the initial excitement that I felt at 15 when I discovered alcohol. All of that had long gone by the end of my drinking. The end of my drinking was sad. It was really painful, both physically and emotionally, and it was mostly alone. So I knew that the party was over. And after I got over the initial kind of resentment and anger around that, I can remember listening to the How It Works being read aloud in meetings and just having this sudden fear that maybe I was one of the people that wouldn't get it. Maybe I was a person who was physically and mentally, you know, incapable of being honest with myself. I knew I was quite a dishonest person. My drinking took me to some places that I wasn't proud of. I'd, you know, stolen money or lied a lot. Sometimes I felt like I was living two separate lives. And there was a lot of dishonesty and a lot of cheating people in order to continue drinking without interruption. And I was just so fearful that I wouldn't be able to get what other people had, because that was the great thing about these rooms for me, is that I could hear that the people in them were me. They'd had the same experiences, and yet today they were happy and shiny and wearing nice clothes and laughing. And I felt like I hadn't laughed in so long. And they had jobs and homes and awesome lives and great friends and kids. And I wanted all of that stuff. And I just thought that, you know, I was so scared that it wouldn't work for me. And I know today that that feeling of inferiority is a huge part of my alcoholism, because my alcoholism is a disease. Whether or not I drink, it's pervasive. It's always there. It's those thoughts and feelings that tell me that I'm better than or worse than other people. And those are thoughts and feelings I still have to deal with today. I've been sober, you know, not drinking for a few years now. And yet I still have to deal with alcoholism. I still have to deal with the disease, the mental obsession. If it's not with alcohol, it's easily with other things, whether that's relationships or food or success or my flaws. You know, there's a lot of obsessive thinking and dishonest thinking. And I have to be careful, because I used to drink over stuff like that. And that's why for me it was so important not to just stop drinking and then do nothing else. I really needed to stop drinking and then find a way to live sober. And for me that was getting a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was never going to be enough for me to just, you know, stop drinking and white knuckle it and maybe go to meetings. I needed to work the steps, and I needed to get a sponsor to take me through and to guide me, because I just felt so lost sometimes. And, you know, a sponsor isn't, you know, someone who tells you what to do necessarily. A sponsor isn't someone who tells you what to do necessarily, but I felt like I wanted to be told what to do. You know, I'd just done whatever I wanted for so long, and it hadn't worked for me. And, you know, just like a toddler, if you give them a game where there's the circle and the square, and they're, you know, just jamming a square peg into a round hole, it doesn't matter how young they are or where their brain is at, eventually they'll go, oh, I should try something different, and then they'll put the peg in the other hole. And I feel like as an alcoholic, maybe that part of my brain is missing, because I would just try the same thing over and over, expecting different results. And that's why I need to go to meetings and be reminded of what it used to be like, and that's what's waiting for me. You know, I'm not a beer ad. You know, I'm not the girl who can pick up a, you know, sparkling glass of wine and enjoy it with friends outside on a sunny patio. You know, that's not what my drinking looked like, and I know that's not what it's going to magically look like now if I picked up. So that's why meetings are important. And the people in the meetings, they really did save my life. You know, it was a place where I felt accepted when I never felt accepted. No one would ever tell me to go away. They told me to keep coming back. And I found out that I didn't actually need a sponsor to tell me what to do, because I could find a higher power of my own, and that was what I was looking for. That was a direction outside of myself. Because like I said, it was a logical thing for me. I was raised atheist, and so I'm very fortunate that Alcoholics Anonymous is not a religious program. It's a spiritual program, and it was pretty basic mathematics for me to go, okay, I've tried doing it my way. Look where that's got me. Maybe it's time to do it someone else's way, and maybe I need something outside myself, and maybe I don't need to know what it is, you know, and I don't need to convert to any religion, I don't need to, you know, name anything, I don't need to align my chakras, although all of those things, you know, I have helped other people I know, and if that's your thing, awesome. The main thing is finding whatever works for you, and I found what works for me, and then giving back to others as well. I was selfish for so long. But at the same time, I've always had a desire to connect with other people. I think that's what a lot of my drinking was about. I mean, I never needed a reason to drink because I just love the feeling of being drunk. You know, I'm an alcoholic and I love the feeling of being pissed. So I never really needed a reason or an excuse, but I think a lot of the drinking I did when I was younger, I was looking for connection. That's what I loved about parties and drinking and using together, was that I felt connected with people, I felt a part of. And the great thing is today I get to feel a part of and connected to people, but I don't have to drink to get there. You know, like I don't have to cause these terrible consequences in my life and my body and my relationships in order to feel connected to people. And things have happened today that I never thought would happen. You know, I recently went on a trip to Europe, and I went to meetings in every country I went to, and I went to meetings in every language. You know, I went to some English-speaking meetings, which was awesome, and I made some friends that I think are lifelong friends in AA. And I also went to meetings in Czech and Polish and German, and I didn't understand a word of them, and yet I felt the recovery in those rooms, and I was welcomed by those people with open arms, even if, you know, we're from different countries and we didn't understand each other. There was that deep understanding of that we need help and we need each other and we need other people, and that's awesome. So I think that's all I would like to share today. So now I'm going to start calling people, so hopefully we can get a few people on the phone. So please just bear with. As I said before, there's going to be a little bit of dead air, as they say in the radio business today, but that is okay, because God's got it. So we're going to try someone now. Okay.
Speaking.
Kia ora, Tony. It's Victoria. How are you?
Kia ora. I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. You are on air. Are you happy to share today?
Very happy. Thank you for asking. Hi, I'm Tony and I'm an alcoholic.
Kia ora, Tony.
So Victoria asked me to phone in today from home. And, of course, at first I thought to myself, gosh, that's weird. I've never shared in AA by telephone before, and that made me nervous for a few minutes. And then I thought, how crazy, the telephone is really important to me in AA, and I use it all the time for my fellowship and talking to my sponsor and everything else. And it just made me recall some of the fundamental stuff about AA that we kind of, well, talk about me, I kind of forget as an alcoholic, but it just takes two of us. It takes two people who are alcoholics in recovery to be together in a conversation to hold a meeting. And that's an amazing thing, really. You know, that simplicity has kept me sober for a while, when for years and years and years I couldn't stop drinking when I wanted to, which is the point, you know, that when I was drinking, especially towards the end of my drinking, it just made me so unhappy all the time, and yet I couldn't stop doing it, which was a crazy thing, because if I think about any other stuff that made me unhappy, I simply wouldn't do it, and that was okay. Even if it meant, you know, hurting other people, not turning up, not being available, if I didn't want to, then, you know, that was okay because that was my choice. But drinking, that was something different. And I used the telephone to find AA, to find help in the first place, when I knew that I had a problem that I couldn't fix by myself. And what I did was I phoned a different sort of helpline where I was living in London, and it was more of a kind of, you know, therapeutic, I have a problem, I don't know how to fix myself helpline. And very quickly, the person I was speaking to on that line was asking me about my drinking. and it turned out that, you know, I was just describing my daily drinking, my struggle not to drink before midday, and how that failed every day, and how I used to torture myself over, today's going to be the day where I don't have to do that shit, I've disappointed myself again, I have done that, oh God, I better just stay here and continue drinking because I can't leave the house now because I'm a mess already, and that kind of endless circle. And it turned out that he was in AA. And said, you know what, this has been really interesting to hear, but maybe you should ring AA. And I was kind of like, oh, really? I sort of knew about AA, but didn't know about AA at all, how that worked, you know. And I felt a bit annoyed with this guy that he was swabbing me off to somebody else now. And it took me another day of drinking before I could pick up the phone to AA, having convinced myself, of course, that what would happen is I would phone and phone and nobody would pick up, or I'd be on hold because it would be too busy. And it wouldn't work out anyway. But what happened to me was the phone was answered pretty immediately after two or three rings. And I had another really good, useful chat with a guy on the phone on the AA helpline, who let me know that there was a meeting I could get to very easily that same day. And not only that, but he was going to be on the door as the greeter and would say hi and make sure I was okay. So I spent the rest of that day really, really scared and worried. And it's a strange thing, even just before Victoria phoned me for this meeting this morning, you know, doing something a little bit different with my AA, or going to a brand new meeting that I've not gone to before, possibly if I'm on holiday somewhere or something, I still get that kind of nervous walking into my first meeting feeling of, oh no, what's it going to be like? How is it going to go? Will I be judged by people, I guess, is my big fear. Will I hate it? Will it destroy something? And it never has so far, I have to tell you. But I felt an awful lot of fear turning up to that first meeting. But as promised, the guy I was speaking to on the phone was on the door and was just friendly, not over-friendly, but fine. Found me a chair, told me kind of in a few words what to expect from the meeting, how that particular meeting's format was, about who shared and what that meant, and then how people shared back and how long it was going to last. And, you know, it was easier than I had expected, much easier than sitting at home and cursing myself and hating myself and being depressed over the fact that once again, I'd, you know, given up and got pissed by myself when actually I had made a promise the night before or that morning that wasn't going to happen again. which was pretty much my daily experience when I first put down the drink and started to go to AA meetings. And all of that was, you know, just making a couple of phone calls got that in motion. I suppose I had to leave the house and turn up to my first meeting. That was hard. And then what I was told after that was go to another meeting. Keep coming back, was how they put it. Keep getting off your bum, leave the house, and find the next meeting. And, you know, people made that as easy as they could for me in my first one or two meetings. My first meeting, somebody gave me a copy of the meetings list, which was the Where to Find. Quite a decent little pamphlet of meetings in London, which meant that there was a meeting I could get to every single day, you know, and pointed out the next available meeting. I think my first meeting was a Friday evening. Yeah, it was. And then, so the next meeting was kind of early on Saturday morning. I was like, oh, okay. But I did go to it because really I had nowhere else to go. And I think at that time I had nothing else to fall back on, you know. Walking into my first meeting for me had been that kind of surrender that I had a problem with alcohol and I couldn't just keep drinking and drinking and drinking and expect something to magically change. I had to learn or figure out or do something to help me stop drinking alcohol and see where that got me. That was kind of my first initial thoughts when I went to my first AA meetings. And I had been left suggestible enough by that beating I'd given myself with the alcohol that I was like, well, I don't have anything else to do. What else, you know? I've tried lots of other stuff. I've tried all the stopping and controlling and everything else that had occurred to me before AA, and none of it had worked. I tried blaming other people in my life. I had tried romantic relationships. I had tried leaving romantic relationships. I tried giving up smoking, thinking, if I don't smoke, I won't drink, and turning it all around on its head. And every single time I'd ended up back in the same place thinking, I don't think I'm stupid. I don't think I'm crazy. What is it? What is it? But not knowing, of course, that the answer was pretty much a simple one. I'm an alcoholic. But, you know, there's a lot to learn about being an alcoholic for me. And certainly I didn't know anything about that. Even though I had a couple of friends already who were in AA and had been for a while, I had stayed very friendly with them, but not ever gone into what it was that they had been, you know, solving and what the solution was for them by going to AA. So I'd never really discovered how it worked. And, you know, it took me a while to figure that out. And the only way I could do that was being with other alcoholics in recovery. You know, that wasn't something that was going to happen with my own thought processes. My own thought processes got me sick and confused every single day, depressed and lonely, upset, all the rest of it. And I needed other people around me to just show their experience, strength and hope so that I could use that as a model as much as possible. And by sitting and listening in a safe place, that's kind of how that worked for me. I didn't know that in my first couple of meetings, of course, but like I said, I kept going back. And I was recommended 90 meetings in 90 days, which was pretty common to really maybe break some old habits that I got into or create some new ones, do a bit of both of that at the same time. And I found that hard to do because I did very long shift work in between my drinking. It's more like drinking was my primary career and what I did to pay the rent was my secondary career. But that involves long 12.5-hour shifts, and I found that just technically hard to get to a meeting every single day. But the way I got around that was going to meetings on my other days where that was just easy and possible. Sometimes going to two meetings because of the luxury of having some lunchtime and some early meetings available, as well as the evening ones. But also using the telephone. Mm. You know, people gave me their phone numbers. And honestly, I don't know how hard I would have found it if mobile phones hadn't been available at the time when I got sober. You know, I'm just grateful that they were. I always had my phone in my pocket available at all times to contact somebody else in recovery. Not that that was an easy thing, because I didn't know anybody at first, you know. And I just had to trust that they meant it when they said, look, you can try ringing. I'd far rather you rang me than pick up the next drink. And we can have a chat anyway. Doesn't matter. And, you know, like a lot of people I've heard in AA say, I didn't really expect that I would want to phone these people. But on the other hand, very soon after putting down the drink and, you know, living my life and doing this new thing by going to AA meetings and finding that I didn't have all the answers and life became tricky at times, I was desperate occasionally and needed somebody to really talk to and to speak to and tell them how I was feeling. You know, my feelings became very important to express, not to just wrap up and keep to myself. And I had to take that leap of faith and use the phone and phone people I didn't know very well. I honestly can't think of an occasion when I phoned another AA in recovery in those early days who didn't respond well to me calling them, you know. Obviously, some people may have been busy and not been able to pick up at the time, but they returned calls. And being able to quickly text if I didn't really have the time for a long conversation but was worried or anxious or concerned or whatever, and getting a quick text back, was really lovely just to know that I was in contact with people who understood and got the way I felt. And, you know, this is the way my recovery has slowly gone, day by day, every 24-hour period of my life, that I've just used the suggestions and the tools that other people who were there already offered to me. Mm-hmm. And said, this works for me, take it or leave it, give it a try. If it doesn't work for you, try something else. And it's as simple and relaxed as that, mm-hmm. if I let it be. On a daily basis. And I'm happy to say that, you know, this morning I woke up sober. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that I was going to be asked to share at a meeting this morning, but mm-hmm. hey, that was great. It took me a few minutes of decision making to think, oh, okay, shall I, shan't I? Mm-hmm. And then I remembered, if we don't do our service, as other people did for me, then we're not giving back what mm-hmm. works for me. And, you know, that's the way that I stay sober. I stay sober by turning up and doing the action mm-hmm. in my recovery. And this was one great way of doing that. So actually, I was happy to go from thinking, oh, no, I don't know about that, to, you know what, I'm really grateful to be asked. That's nice. That's great. Awesome. Wow.
Well, Well, thank you so much for your time, Tony.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're just getting another call, but thank you so much for calling. That was awesome.
Thank you, Victoria.
Okay, have a great day. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, awesome. So that was Tony sharing his experience, strength and hope with us. And we are the Wellington Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air, and we are broadcasting on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. So we will share some meetings, lists, and information on at the end of the show, so that if you or anyone you know relates to what you've heard today and you would like to reach out to another sober alcoholic, just as Tony and I have done in the past, then we can share those numbers with you. So I'm just going to try another sober alcoholic in recovery to see if he can talk with us today. Hello?
Hello.
Hey, Robert, how's it going?
I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. You are live on air at the moment.
Well, hello, everybody in New Zealand.
Awesome. So would you mind just sharing your experience in strength and hope with us, maybe just for 5 minutes, just as you would in a normal meeting?
Well, is there a topic?
What it used to be like and what happened and what it's like now, I guess.
Sure. Hi, my name is Robert. I'm a chronic alcoholic.
Hi, Robert.
I was born in Manhattan, and I grew up in Brooklyn, as you might be able to tell from my colloquial patois. I am ethnically Irish and Italian, and let me assure you, the stereotypes are true. there are a lot of people that you hear in meetings who say that they never like drinking. I was not one of those people. I really like drinking. And being Irish and Italian, I really like whiskey and wine. Not so much beer, whiskey and wine, but I will drink beer, or I would. I come from, as I said, like a family of people who had chronic alcoholism. My grandfather used to make wine in the basement, listening to opera off of a transistor radio. And on the Irish side, my great-grandfather was in the RA, and then my grandfather was a beat cop and a binge drinker. My father's sober. I got a couple of cousins that are sober. And I've never been on a second date with a woman who wasn't an active alcoholic. So, you know, I'm pretty firmly entrenched in the culture of alcoholism. And for a long time, you know, I started off in Al-Anon. For a long time, I thought that I had psychological problems, mental health issues. I had a troubled childhood. And all those things are true. But what I didn't understand is that those weren't the reasons that I had a drinking problem, and they weren't the reasons I drank. They were, as I heard people say, I drank on them. They were reasons I used to exacerbate my alcoholism, my alcohol dependency. And what happened was, is it got to the point where it was very clear to me that I was about to die, that my alcoholism, that my compulsive drinking had led me to a point that it was a matter of days, at most weeks, before I ended up past the point of no return in jail, hospital, and probably the cemetery. And, you know, for me, I was a binge drinker, so it was very hard for me at first to identify. I like to think of, if you consider the mythological animals of a vampire and a werewolf as metaphors, you know. You have people who, like, administer, like, short doses to try to medicinally intake alcohol, usually white alcohol, like, you know, vodka, gin, things like that, to kind of maintain themselves. Very often, a lot of these people are opiate addicts as well. That's kind of a vampire. And because I didn't drink like that, I didn't at first understand that I was an alcoholic because I am the other type. I'm what you might call a werewolf, where I can be dry for extended periods of time and then just rage out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it was originally hard for me to identify. And it was a great help to me that My sponsor was also like that. It's something that I've been talking about for a couple of days in meetings, which is, you know, getting a sponsor who really understood where I was coming from because they came from the same place, you know? Someone who had a similar background to me. And not necessarily some, like, the guy who became my sponsor wasn't someone that I liked initially, you know? He was, he came from a well-off family from the South. I don't really know what the Kiwi equivalent of that would be, but, you know, I'm a Yankee, and he's a Southerner, and he's not someone that I initially really wanted to hear the message from, but I had been in the rooms, I had been dry for 6 or 7 months, and I had a couple of sponsors, and I was going insane, because one of the things that I found out firsthand was the difference between someone who has a drinking problem and someone who's an alcoholic is that if you have a drinking problem, the drinking is the problem. And so when you take away the drink, your problems get to be okay. Now, an alcoholic, when you take away the drink, the pink cloud effect happens, but the pink cloud is really just the relief that your body feels from not being actively poisoned every day. And then after a while, it kind of meets an equilibrium. Mm-hmm. But then the real problem, the untreated alcoholism, tends to spin out. And I had people say to me that it seemed like I had started drinking when I was dry for 4 or 5 months. You know, that I got really introspective and manic and neurotic in a way that when I was drinking, I seemed to have my life together. Which is like a real signifier that I was an actual alcoholic. So what eventually happened was is I got with a guy who had done the step work in the big book. And he had done it with someone who had done the step work in the big book with someone. It wasn't out of, like, you know, a workbook that they found in rehab or an online survey or just a kind of a picking and choosing of things that they'd heard in meetings. You know, we went through the book. We saw, you know, he explained to me what the things in the book meant. And, you know, for me, like, when I first came in, I had a lot of hang-ups about these, you know, these rich white Protestants telling me about God. I was the last thing I wanted to hear, you know. And, you know, like I think it's in To the Wives. It, you know, it starts off to the women folk, and women folk are separate words. And I'm like, this is with J.R. Tolkien? Like, what the fuck is this? Like, I really had a big issue with it. Fun fact, they were both, like, horse riders in the same war, so they wrote in kind of the same style. It makes sense. But, you know, all my issues, my hang-ups about the word God and all that kind of stuff didn't have as much stamina as my desperate attempts to not be insane and alive at the same time. Because when I was an active alcoholic, I had two options. I could be insane or I could be alive, but I couldn't. I could be sane or I could be alive. You know, like, if I wanted sanity, I had to die. You know, to cure my insanity, I had to actively kill myself through the various means that alcoholism lays at your feet and makes available. So when I got to this guy, he said to me, like, if you want to be okay no matter what, give me a call. And I'm like, all right. And in the back of my head, I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? Like, I'm bipolar. Like, I need real medication. I got real problems, quote unquote. But by the time I got to talking to him, because he was recommended via someone else in the program, I was too tired to fight, and I was willing to try whatever it took. And that's, like, the ability to wear oneself out, like Muhammad Ali would say, like the rope-a-dope, you know, just let someone tie themselves out, I think is an oft-overlooked aspect of the program. Because, you know, I had tried to do the steps a bunch of times in a bunch of different programs before. But when I got to the steps with this guy, I was ready to do whatever because I just didn't have any other options. It wasn't even the last house. It was the last room in the last house on the block.
Hey, Robert, sorry to interrupt, but we do just have to finish up now. But I just want to say thank you so much for calling in and your service. And I hope things are well with you. And I'm sure we'll catch up soon.
Thanks for having me on. Sorry for going over time. See you guys later.
See ya. Bye. Awesome. So I'm glad that we had a few other people joining me today. We don't have time for anything else, but thank you also for joining. Look up AA online if you're wanting to attend a meeting, and we will close with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the best.
That program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding the Access Internet Radio Project.